Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Living a Richer Life, life-changing talk radio, a place where like-minded people from across the country come to listen, share, and learn from topics that deal with their health, wealth, hope, and prosperity. You can participate by sharing your comments or questions from the Richer Life blog page or chat room at www.blogtalkradio.com/richerlife, or by using the phone to call in. Let's join the show.
Well, good evening. This is Charlotte Grant Cobb.
And this is Earl Cobb.
Throughout the month of August, Life-Changing Talk Radio has teamed with the Western Writers of America, Inc. to produce and broadcast 4 very special episodes. Each episode will include interviews with members of the WWA and will address several interesting and enlightening aspects of contemporary Western literature. The overall theme for this year's series is Western Writers Live On. Our theme for tonight's show is the New Western and Westerns in Film and Television.
When most of us think of reading Westerns, classic Western authors such as Louis L'Amour or Zane Grey come to mind. But several contemporary authors are taking the themes of the traditional Western and applying them in more contemporary settings. If you enjoy stories about semi-nomadic wanderers who live hard lives, mostly in the wilderness settings, dealing with questions of honor and justice, you might want to try one of these stories of the New West. Also, Westerns today are in both movies and television, but you may be surprised to learn that Westerns are the major defining genre of the American film industry. They are one of the oldest, most enduring, and flexible genres, and one of the most characteristically American genres in their mythic origins. Let's learn more about the New Western and Western in today's film and television.
And, you know, we are so delighted to have with us tonight 2 members of the Western Writers of America, Kirk Ellis, award-winning writer, screenwriter, producer, and the winner of 2 Emmys, a WGA Award, a Peabody, and the Humanitas Prize. And also joining us tonight is Ann Hillerman, award-winning author of 8 nonfiction books and the WWA Spur Award winner for Best First Novel. Welcome, Kirk and Ann, to Living a Richer Life.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're looking forward to your questions tonight, Charlotte.
Well, I'm not going to make them hard, and there will be no test, Ann. So we're going to begin our interview and our discussion with Kirk Ellis and Ann Hillerman right after this message.
You're listening to Living a Richer Life, life-changing talk radio. We will open the phone lines at 25 minutes after the hour. Our toll-free number is 855-345-4714. You can also join the discussion via the blog page and on our chat room at blogtalkradio.com/richerlife. Now back to tonight's show.
And welcome back. Our theme tonight is the New Westerns and Westerns in Film and Television, and our interview guests are Kirk Ellis, award-winning writer and screenwriter and producer, and also Ann Hillerman, award-winning writer and winner of the WWA Spur Award for Best First Novel. To be honest with you all, I already told Ann this morning, I am such a fan, and I promise not to gush during this interview, but honestly, we are so delighted to have you participate in this collaboration with the Western Writers of America, and it's just great having you both with us tonight. So we're going to start our show as we traditionally do by having each of you share a little bit about yourself with our listening audience. Where did you grow up, and how did you arrive at your current place in life? And Anne, would you start for us?
Sure, I would be glad to. I was fortunate enough to grow up in Santa Fe and then in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I got to my place in life due to my parents, which I guess is what most people would say. My father, who most people probably know as the mystery writer Tony Hillerman. Early in his career, my father was a journalist, and he had been working at little papers in Texas and Oklahoma, and he had an opportunity to move up in the newspaper world. He was offered a job in Santa Fe, and luckily for me, he and my mom moved to Santa Fe, and then after about 10 years here, he was offered a position with the University of New Mexico, teaching journalism and also working in administration. So then our family moved to Albuquerque. Well, as I was growing up, I think because of my father's passion for journalism, and also because of both my mother and my father's tremendous enthusiasm for good stories. The idea that I would become a writer, it just seemed like the natural thing for me to do. So I started my career in journalism. I did that for about 20 years, and as part of that, I kind of segued into writing nonfiction books. And You know, a lot of journalists have a dream of becoming novelists, but that wasn't necessarily true for me. However, after my father died in 2008, I realized that besides missing him, I also was missing his wonderful mysteries that were set on the Navajo Reservation. I felt like I had grown up with his wonderful characters. So I think that was kind of what inspired me to switch careers and go into fiction. So that's kind of a long answer to your question there.
I love it. And I agree with you, those of us who missed Joe and Chi, and so we're glad you did. Kirk, would you like to tell us a little bit about you and where you grew up?
Sure, I'm always a bit better talking about the work than I am about myself, but I'm a little different from Ann's story. My father worked for Sears, and my upbringing was a bit of the retail equivalent of being a military brat. I was shuttled around from one small town in Texas to another until I was in high school, born as far east as you can get without being in Louisiana, a small town called Orange, Texas, which is now, oddly enough, home to a very important Western museum. But I grew up in El Paso, and so I got to know the Southwest as a kid. Thought I was going to be moving into archaeology and anthropology, dragged my parents around to virtually every national monument, national park in the five-state area, spent summers on Indian reservations, and grew up speaking English and Spanish pretty much at the same time, and have always had an interest in our world south of the border and its literature and art. But I went to college as a film student. I got turned on to film as a teenager, really trying to see every classical movie that I could, and went to USC Film School. And where Ann's stories and my dovetail is as a journalist. I went out, got out of school, and immediately went into work for the LA Times and the Hollywood Reporter, really starting at the bottom as a proofreader and cub reporter and copy editor. And eventually I worked my way up to the role of international editor at the Hollywood Reporter when I was 24. I was the youngest person, I think still am, the youngest person ever attain that role, which introduced me to not only the world outside the United States, but also the world of World Cinema, which continues to really inform what I do in my own writing. And worked in L.A. as a journalist for any number of years in the entertainment industry and the cultural arts scene, and followed a kind of natural cycle of corruption into actually writing screenplays. It was hard to cover that beat without people asking you in the 80s whether or not you actually wanted to write a script. And eventually I got around to doing that. My first produced screenplay of note was based on Truman Capote's second novel, The Grass Harp, which was done as a movie for Fine Line Features in 1994, but not released until 1996. And from that time on, I've really been full-time screenwriting and producing now for the last 20 years.
Very good. Very good. This is exciting for, I think, people to hear, because everyone comes to writing or to their life in different paths. And obviously, there was a place where yours crossed. You know, the overall theme for this year's series is Western writers live on. And the theme for tonight's show is the new Western and Westerns in film and television. So I really kind of wanted to start our discussion tonight talking about this idea of the new Western, both in book and in film and in television. And, you know, in your novel, Spider-Woman's Daughter, I think this was your debut novel, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right.
Again, it's set in the Southwest. It's on the Navajo Nation. You tell us a lot about Navajo Nation and Santa Fe. Do you consider your novel a, quote, new Western, end quote, and why or why not?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I had never actually thought of it as a new Western or as any kind of a Western until I was thinking about this interview. And what Earl said in his introduction really rang true for me. You know, he was saying that Westerns are about hard lives, and they also deal with questions of honesty and justice and honor. And certainly, my first book, Spider-Woman's Daughter, touches on all of those subjects. My new book, Rock with Wings, that just came out in May, kind of continues along those same lines. And also, I think it's so interesting that Kirk and I are on tonight, on the show tonight together, because one of the subplots in Rock with Wings concerns a movie that's being made in Monument Valley, kind of in the, and of course, Monument Valley was the place that the Western movies were born. And so this is kind of an update on that theme. So, yeah, I guess my book is kind of a new Western. Rock with Wings has a gambling in it. It has horses in it, although horses aren't really a key factor in it. Let's see, it has uppity women. I guess that was all part of the traditional
Western. That's right.
It has Indians. It has cowboys. So, sure. I mean,
It's set in the West.
Set in the West, right. It's, as you mentioned, Spider-Woman's Daughter was set in Santa Fe and in various spots on the Navajo Reservation, including the beautiful and enigmatic Chaco Canyon.
Yes.
Rock with Wings is set in Shiprock, which is one of the really trademark natural features of the Four Corners area. And then, as I mentioned, it's set in Monument Valley. So you really can't get more Western, I don't think, than Monument Valley.
One of the things that we're trying to do, actually, at Western Writers of America is to help not only our authors but the public at large redefine or get their heads around a new definition of the Western. I mean, the two names that Earl mentioned at the outset of the show are the two names that we always hear about. I might even add that they continue to plague us when people hear the name Western and writer together. It's Louis L'Amour and Zane Grey. And some people remember Owen Wister, who wrote The Virginian, perhaps the classic Western novel written by a man who was an Eastern. And so, you know, Westerns are not necessarily about how they've come to be defined by the genre of film and six-shooter novels. A Western is a book written about the West. John Muir is a Western writer. Aldo Leopold is a Western writer. Edward Abbey is a Western writer. One of our Spur Award winners this year was a woman who wrote a book about the Exxon Valdez oil spill, one of the most important stories to hit the West in many years. If you're writing about fracking in North Dakota or in the San Juan Basin in New Mexico, you're writing a Western. If you are Larry McMurtry writing about your hometown in Texas and you call that book The Last Picture Show, I'll argue that's a Western because it's about the contemporary Western experience. Westerns have been predicted dead almost since their invention. They always resuscitate themselves because they constantly redefine themselves. And one of the pleasures of being an officer of the WWA is to see how many authors are now moving beyond the sort of genre stereotype into really compelling stories of the modern West and the classical West that haven't been told before. They're coming at it from very different angles, people whose stories were not told in the conventional genre.
True. And, you know, I want to get back to this idea of characteristics of Westerns, but I wanted to talk a little bit about what I see both of you do. For example, you know, Kurt, when you were doing John Adams, one of the things I've heard you speak about and you remind people of is that there wasn't not an American archetype, if you would, during the John Adams period. They were British, and so they thought like Brits, right? And I see that even in, I think it's in Spider-Woman's Daughter. It might be in, I just started Rock of Wings, so I don't know. But I think it was when, what I'm trying to say is that there are points in the book where, and I don't know if you do this intentionally, but it looks like you're making some corrections to, say, our beliefs in, say, for example, there's a part in the book where you talk about Hopi, and it says we have Hopi cats in us now, and they used to be called Kachinas. So you sort of help us grow in reframing how we used to think, even about words and the words we used to use as they related to explaining something that was Western. Do you guys do that intentionally to help us grow as readers?
Sure, sure. I think your duty, if you're writing fiction or screenplays or whatever, is to tell the truth. So in fiction, I mean, it would just be anachronistic for me to use, you know, some of the words that were popular turn of the century. And mm-hmm. the other thing also that I think characterizes a new mysteries. I mentioned the role of women. One thing that I was able to do in my series was to give a woman, a Navajo woman, a leading role. And in fact, the history of the Navajo tribe is that there were many women warriors. And unfortunately, that characteristic didn't get translated very well when it came to how mainstream society viewed the Navajos. I think the thought was, first of all Indians are like, and then all warriors must be like, you know, Cochise and Geronimo and Sitting Bull. Mm-hmm. And the whole layer of brave, strong women who, you know, went out to fight for their kids was kind of overlooked. Yeah, it's an exciting time to be living in the West. There are so many things to write about. And I think as time goes on, it's the resources we have will be even more rich. I was pleased to hear Kirk talk about the people who won the Spur Award. The gentleman who won it for first novel had a wonderful book, which in part involves border issues. And I think, in the traditional Western, you know, there would have been Indian raids. But in this one, you know, it has to do with, with immigrants who are coming over, you know, legal, illegal, what are they bringing with them, that whole kind of tension.
Right,
and that
book
set in urban cities in Arizona and then partly out in the boondocks.
Well, you know, as you say that, I know that being in Arizona and that you could take the whole world that we live in and plant it anywhere in a Western theme or a Western characterization. It seems that as Americans, we're always looking for a hero. Even if you look at the elections, we always say we like straight talkers and straight shooters. So what are those characteristics? They're almost archetypes. They just keep following us around, and we keep demanding them. Wouldn't you guys agree as writers, you know, you couldn't write anything, really, that didn't have some kind of hero in there?
Sure. I think the classic Western plot is sort of, you know, the stranger comes to town either because he's fleeing his past or because there's something in the future that's attracted him there. And then when he gets there, he has adventures. And in the classic Western, he makes things better, even if he comes to a sad end. And I think that's a story that always resonates. And there are a million variations on it.
Right.
The Western is endlessly malleable. There's a wonderful book by a historian and scholar, James Lenihan, called Showdown, which really talks about how the Western has refracted who we are as Americans from decade to decade. And it's still something that I see in the way our popular culture is written about and as it continues to evolve. If you look at the Westerns of the silent era and going into the early 30s, they are the traditional Westerns, the Westerns that are very much part of that archetype that was set by people like Fane Gray in his period. But if you look at the Westerns made by the same filmmakers, especially John Ford, after World War II, they become darker and more analytical. Ford's, one of his first films after the war is Fort Apache, still in my mind the greatest of the cavalry trilogy with Henry Fonda and John Wayne, which is set in the Apache Wars, but it's actually about the Battle of the Little Bighorn. And it is, for most of its running time, a tremendous analysis and indeed condemnation of the military imperialist mindset. And Ford would continue to refine his vision of what the West was about and what America meant in that period. But you see, particularly in the 1950s and the early 1960s, the Western, among all the genres of film and indeed of literature, becomes the place in which authors and filmmakers can safely examine questions that are simply not being spoken about in more mainstream fiction and film. The issue of race, the issue of the role of women. And you move into the 1970s, Little Big Man, the movie based on Thomas Berger's wonderful novel, is actually more about Vietnam than it is about the Indian Wars. And you can certainly, you still see that 40 years hence. And I think that's what makes the genre so exciting and so diverse, because there is room to tell these stories that have long been suppressed or simply unspoken by people. You're seeing more stories about women, more stories about Chinese, more stories about, as Dan says, the warrior tradition in matrilineal Native American society. So,
absolutely,
this is all a reason that the Western will continue to thrive.
Well, I also see both the Western genre, but also organizations like Western Writers of America, being open enough to invite the perspective that hasn't been shared, wasn't shared in the 18th and 19th, even the 20th century, if you would. And so from our perspective and in our dialogues with the Western writers, it's an acceptance of telling the real history, not, you know, not his story, but her story and their story and other people's stories. And I think that that acceptance is really huge. So you all, now we are in this global world, and it's interesting when you travel overseas, you still see a lot of the old West movies. And it's interesting that I think a lot of people still see us, America, as this cowboy challenge, the cowboys and Indian story as it was portrayed. And when folks come out to the America, they're still expecting us to be that same people. Do you think we, as writers, are tackling that differently, or, you know, branding our writing differently, or how are we reaching out or explaining that things have changed, or do we have to?
Well, as Kirk mentioned, there's room in the under the Western writers umbrella for all kinds of stories. There are people who are still writing those kind of the romantic version of the West, and so fine, you know, the cowboy as hero, you know, set at the turn of the century. But then there are, I know one of the writers who also was a winner this year was C.J. Box, you know, who lives in Montana.
Yeah.
His are certainly Westerns, because Montana is always a huge character in his books. But anybody who reads those books would be under no illusions, I think, about, you know, guys walking around in spurs and cowboy hats and, you know, taking off their hats to the ladies, or, you know, Indians who hardly speak English. I mean, his writing is very sophisticated, and I think a very interesting mirror of the contemporary West.
Very good.
And you don't actually have to travel abroad to understand the influence the Westerners have had. You see tourists from Europe and from Asia coming to the West, and really at our national parks, and they tend to be more knowledgeable than the American tourists about what they're actually seeing. Many of them, particularly the tourists from Germany, still read the works of Karl May, the great Western German author who never set foot in New York City. That's because he was in jail on an embezzlement charge at the time. So it's amazing how the West has really informed people's view of America. But I would not take exception, but I would simply ask you to think about what you said earlier in a different light. It's not just that sort of traditional cowboy West they're responding to. What people have always responded to in the genre of the Western is that sense of openness and independence. And
very good.
The spaces in which an individual, male, female, black, white, Asian, Native American, can define himself or herself in a way that traditional society does not permit. That is the one thread that you see running through Westerns from their inception to the contemporary work that we're talking about today.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
good.
What, the West always was a place of second chances, a place where you could start your life over. You could maybe make a fortune. You could stand on your own feet. You know, rise or fall. And I think the other thing that makes Western writing stand out is our wonderful scenery.
Absolutely
beautiful. My dad just started his mystery series, he got a review in the Boston Globe, and the reviewer was saying, just when you think something's going to happen, then Hillerman starts talking about the scenery. And he was saying it negatively, but actually my dad's fans for 30 years loved his descriptions of the scenery.
Exactly.
So I think that's another thing that we are really, as Western writers, we're really blessed with. I mean, for me, writing fiction, if I am needing a pause, I can have someone look out the window and there's plenty to write about.
Indeed. I'm enjoying this conversation, Anne and Kurt. I can't believe it's already 25 minutes after the hour. So we're going to take a quick break here. When we return, we will continue our discussion about the new Western and Westerns in film and television. We're going to learn more about the current and future work of our tonight's award-winning guests. And we are going to open up the phone lines at that time and take comments and questions from our listening audience. Remember, audience on the phone, to press the number 1 on your keypad if you have a question or comment. You can also meet us on the blog talkradio.com/richerlifechatline, email us at info@richerlifellc.com, or send us a tweet at @richerlifetalk, and we will be back right after this message.
Don't forget to join us again next Thursday night, August 20th, for the third episode of this year's Western Writers of America series. The theme for next week's show will be the Western Trails, Legend, Facts, and Great Stories. And our interview guests will be Will Bagley, historian, award-winning author of over 20 books on overland, immigration, frontier violence, railroads, mining, and the Mormons, and Melanie Groves, award-winning Southern New Mexico author whose novels reflect her fascination and ties with the era of the Old West and its gunfighters. Only here on blogtalkradio.com/richerlife.
And welcome back. Our theme tonight is the new Western and Westerns in film and television. And our interview guests are Kirk Ellis, award-winning writer and screenwriter, producer, and winner of 2 Emmys. And our guest is also Anne Hillerman, award winner of the Best First Novel and award-winning author of 8 nonfiction books. Welcome back, you all. Earl, do we have any questions from our emailers or callers or in our chat room at this time?
Well, hello, Charlotte, Anne, and Kurt. we're having a great time in the chat room.
Yes.
It looks like we've got some seasoned listeners. One listener, it looks like he was listening to last week's series, and looks like some novice as well. And we have quite a few people on the phone line. Remember to hit the number 1 on your keypad to let us know that you would be interested, okay, in terms of sharing and being a part of the discussion. So, but let's take a couple of the emails right now, Charlotte, until we see some of the phones light up. Let's take this one. This is an interesting one. It says, "I listened to this series last year when the guest was Cowboy Mike. I was somewhat surprised to hear about the diversity of the population in the quote-unquote Old West that has been rarely portrayed in books and movies. In question, period. In the new Western, do your guests foresee a more realistic makeup in the characters?
I think we've seen that certainly in Western fiction and nonfiction. We've seen it in the resurgence of different stories in Western film, and we'll continue to see more of that. It's not that there wasn't that diversity in the more classical period. All those characters were there, but they were on the margins. And what you're now seeing is the characters on the margins are now becoming the characters at the center, as they may well have been in actual history, because these stories have always been there for people to unearth, and now they're being examined with a fresh eye.
Very good.
Yep.
Andy, you have any comments? Oh, sorry, Earl.
No, I think Kirk answered that very well.
Perfect. Thank you.
Here's a comment, and several people have chimed in on it in the chat room. It says, I must admit I am a novice to the Western genre, so my question is, why are spaghetti Westerns called spaghetti?
That's clearly a question for the movie guy of this panel.
Yes, definitely.
Spaghetti
I do write about
that,
though, but you better handle that, Kirk.
Spaghetti Westerns were called spaghetti Westerns simply because they came from Italy. You can adapt that to everywhere. There have been Westerns from Asia that are known as noodle Westerns. And it's really funny. That's how they came to be known. They were not called that by their creators. They were called that by the people in America who were reviewing the films. And you have to understand that when Italy started releasing these things, there was a flood of films, not just the more famous films with Clint Eastwood that Sergio Leone directed, but so many knockoffs, literally by the hundreds, that they were churned out like pasta, and they became known as spaghetti Westerns.
Ah, thank you very much.
Some of them were like Chef Boyardee variety, too.
Yeah. My favorite term was for German Westerns of that period, which were actually known as Spätzle Westerns.
Spätzle, so. That's right. That's right, absolutely. Well, yeah. Thank you for the foodie lesson in Westerns. Very good. Earl, thank you so much. We are close approaching our end of time, and I definitely want to talk about what you two are working on right now. And I know you have a new book because I just started it. Can you tell us a little bit about that or anything you choose to talk about what you're working on right now?
Well, because fans were so generous when they read Spider-Woman's Daughter, that book did remarkably well for a first novel. And so my publisher took note and gave me a contract for 3 more books. So I'm now working on the 3rd book in this newly revised Navajo mystery series, featuring Bernadette Manuelito as the main crime solver. And this book, the book I'm working on now, is going to include some basketball, which is a very important item on the Navajo reservation. And I think probably not featured in too many Westerns. And then it also will include some trips to the Grand Canyon, which, of course, is a classic Western setting. And I'm really, really enjoying this. I wasn't sure how I would handle the transition from nonfiction to fiction. But the more fiction I write, the more ideas I get. So I'm very much looking forward to doing the next books in this series. Thanks for asking.
Absolutely. So when you are converting from nonfiction to fiction, do you have a desire to prevaricate more than you normally would? We had an author on, who was it, honey? It'll come to me. But one of the questions was, do you always stick to the facts? And he said, I'm a horse wrangler, I'm a liar, I'm a cheat, I'm a Western writer. So...
Well,
so you can have
I don't always know the facts, but I try to find out what the facts are before I mess around with them. In my new book, Rock with Wings, I had to create a new Navajo police station because I really needed one to be there to move the story along. And I'm sure the Navajo Nation would be very grateful if there actually was one there, but there isn't. But nobody has made a big deal out of it. I think when people are reading fiction, mainly they want a story that grips them and entertains them. And if you fudge on a few of the facts, as long as you have the essence of it right, I think you're probably in pretty good shape.
We don't change the location of Chaco Canyon, but certainly
no.
We can move around other things. Absolutely. Lovely, lovely. Kirk, what are you working on right now?
The thing that's most recent that I'm most excited about, I've just finished the first draft of a script for a new HBO film about Civil War experiences of Harriet Tubman, in which the great black actress Viola Davis will play Harriet, as well as co-executive produce the film with me. So the script has gotten some of the best notices I've had for a first draft in quite a while. HBO is getting the script actually next week, and we hope that with the current situation, with everybody really being aware of race in America and what's happened in South Carolina recently, the movement to put Harriet Tubman on a bill, and let's hope she replaces Andrew Jackson, not Alexander Hamilton, that we will be in production sometime early next year. So we're confident about that. On the Western level, I'm developing a series, actually with a production company here in Santa Fe, about the lives of the Harvey girls on the Western frontier.
Okay.
During the whole railroad boom, Fred Harvey, who I'm sure many of your listeners know is the great railroad, the restaurant tycoon who really changed the way people were fed on the railroads. And the Harvey girls were known as the women who civilized the West. In many ways they did, and their story is one that people only know through a 1946 Judy Garland musical that is mostly fiction. So we're getting very good traction on that. We've had some interesting conversations with companies in Europe. Speaking to your earlier comment about the Europeans being fascinated with this period in our history, so we'll see how that goes. So life is good at the moment.
Very good. Now, Kurt and Anne, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask you that the big question. I know a lot of people, Kurt, want to know how to be a screenwriter and producer in film and TV. Do you just write and it gets picked up, or do you have to sell it?
My advice on that is that if you know how to do anything else well, please pursue that line of work. Because, and I'm not saying that to take competition out of the marketplace, although that probably is an ulterior motive, but it is a grueling, difficult task. Book authors, whether they're writing fiction or nonfiction, at least have the privilege of owning their copyright and of having words they wrote bound in between a couple of nice hard covers or very sturdy soft covers. Screenwriters labor in a bit of a vacuum. You write 5 to 7 scripts for every one that gets made, even when you're working for really high-powered partners. Just the odds of getting something on the air or on the screen is very, very, very short. And so you have to be prepared for a lot of frustration and a lot of rejection, but you also have to have the courage of your convictions to say, no, this is a story that I think deserves telling. You've made the decision that its best arena is the visual arena as opposed to the arena of words.
Very good. Thank you. I needed to get that out because I know that was a question that I saw in an email earlier. It's not easy to do any of the work that you all do. So tell me, Kurt, you talked a little bit about some of the collaborations that you have, which are a big piece, I think, of how writers are working today, collaborating with others, both on doing the historic work, the groundwork. And do you have any collaborations that are sort of resonating that you want to share, either with your own work or with the Western writers or universities?
Oh, that's a big question. Well, with my own work, when I started writing fiction, I had to learn both a lot about the Navajo people and about the culture of law enforcement. And so I was fortunate to find a lot of generous people who guided me through and probably groaned when I got it wrong despite their best efforts. Other collaborations, I do a writers' conference in Santa Fe where we help writers. Usually these are people who've been writing professionally, say they've been in the public relations world or they've been scientific writers, or maybe they've been self-published and they would like to take it to the next level. Some of them have dreams of writing a screenplay. Kirk has been one of our presenters at that conference. Anyway,
that's good.
A wonderful kind of collaboration because our faculty are mostly people from New Mexico, although we do bring in other Southwestern writers, but our students come from all over. And I'm always delighted to see the way students, the interaction between students and faculty, and even better than that, the interaction among the students themselves, how people really learn from each other's experiences, good or bad, and they kind of support each other then during the year. So it's been a wonderful experience for me. I think that the world needs as many good stories as it can get, whether they are on paper or on film. I think all of us are just hungry for that. And so it's really been a wonderful pleasure for me to be able not only to be a writer, but to be a facilitator to help other people get their writing out to a bigger audience.
That is wonderful. I know you come from such a powerful legacy, and then to be, you know, paying it forward is wonderful. I really appreciate that about both of you and the kind of sharing that you do. One last question before, because we're almost out of time. What about social media? Are you all big users, getting into it, finding it helpful?
I have to be, because so much of the industry is really based in social media. So many people communicate in social media. It's also something that we've embraced at the organization at Western Writers as a way of getting the message out that Western writing is for everybody and can be written by everybody. I really endorse what Anne said about the fact that the world can never have too many stories, and there are so many out there that haven't been told that people need to hear, and social media is one way that you get that word out.
Very good.
Yeah, I particularly use Facebook. I'm not so big on some of the other forms of social media, I think mainly because my audience fits that demographic pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And like every day I learn something from people who have friended me. I mean, they give me such wonderful ideas. The other day I came across a site that was specifically devoted to the renaissance of indigenous foods. And there was a little article there on digging up wild onions and finding wild garlic and making blue corn mush. And it was, I mean, I don't think I would use those recipes, but I was just really intrigued to find that little niche of people who are, again, exploring some of the wonderful opportunities that we have in the West.
Excellent. Well, on that thought, you know, we are out of time for tonight's show, Anne and Kirk. I can't thank you enough for joining us on tonight's show. It's been such a pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, you can learn more about Anne Hillerman and her work by going to www.annehillerman.com. And you can learn more about Kirk Ellis and his work by going to his Facebook page at www.facebook.com/Kirk, K-I-R-K, dot Ellis, dot 92. Is that right, you all?
That's right.
Very good.
And I think you just gave me information I never knew about how to access my Facebook page. So there you go.
I love it. So. Thanks to all of you for joining and participating in tonight's show, and we hope that you will join us again next Thursday night for our third episode of this year's four-part series with the Western Writers of America. Remember to go to our broadcast page at www.blogtalkradio.com/richerlife and click the blue follow button and show your support for this weekly broadcast. We'll be back with you again next Thursday night. Until then, continue to live a richer life.
You've been listening to Living a Richer Life with Earl and Dr. Charlotte Grant Cobb. Thank you for joining us this evening, and we'll look forward to having you back again at the same time next Thursday.